Hi, this is Charisse Kenyon, and you're listening to the Beauty Me podcast, all about beauty beyond the BS. This week's guest is London-based Claudia Walder, a fashion stylist and founder of Able, a magazine created for disabled people. When Claudia was 23 and working as a stylist, she began to experience some health problems, like these quite different ones that eventually would become incredibly debilitating. Her energy levels dropped and she began sleeping for hours a day. And within 6 months, she was diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome. You might imagine being diagnosed would have come as a huge relief, but it was then that Claudia soon learned how little would be done for her, not even what could be done for her. It's how little the NHS and even going private would kind of give her. It was just the rewards were very few. And in this conversation, you'll learn that so much of her healing or simply coping with CFS was going to come from her own self-initiated research. Claudia shares the processes that she still relies on today to keep her mind positive. There's definitely a heavy emphasis on mind over body or mind over matter in this conversation. She really relies on her mind to get her through whatever challenges come along, and also shares that once she was diagnosed, life became a little bit more lonely because not everybody understood, even those closest to her. She also shares insights into the lack of representation that affects disabled people and the conversations that need to be had around ableism and the labeling of so-called invisible disabilities. I feel this conversation was a huge gift for me, and I hope it will be for you. I learned a lot from Claudia just because she seems to know her body so well. She pays very close attention to her body. And I think that's something that we should all do. One thing I really like in this chat is obviously we talk about Claudia's magazine that she created. That is a big thing. She created Able. It's had two issues and she put her heart and soul into that. And I love that she talks about she's on an actual hiatus from the magazine right now. She's not working on it right now. And it's because she just needs time for herself. I'll let her explain it, obviously, in her words. But I think that takes a lot of guts to say, yeah, I started something. And yeah, I've hit pause because I cannot give everything. She is her best gift to herself. And I think we could all be a lot more like Claudia. I think she's definitely going to make you think. And this is a must listen for anyone who is feeling challenged by their body right now. So have a listen and be sure to share this with anyone you think could benefit.
Let's talk about you. I'm really excited to get into this. We're definitely going to talk about, you know, how your life has changed, like your life. I know you describe yourself as a former stylist, your life now, Ablezine, but I feel that the one thing that brings everybody together is like, I like to know how you wake up, whatever that entails, from the minute you open your eyes, just tell me.
Well, for the past, maybe almost the past year now, the first thing I do when I wake up, more or less religiously, is like 15 minutes of breath work. So the kind that I do is like a Wim Hof technique. And for me, it started at some point during the pandemic. I developed like heart palpitations and was feeling very like I was having heart problems and I was going into the hospital all the time and having tests done. And they couldn't find a cause for why my heart rate was so elevated. And with all of the other chronic illness problems that I've had, this was one thing that I didn't want to be dealing with on top of everything else. And my understanding was potentially that I'd had like a stealth COVID infection because I've never tested positive for COVID. And that potentially my organs experienced some sort of damage as a result of the infection. And that's why it occurred. And just with like feelings of compression around my chest and stuff, I wanted to try to use breath work to exercise my lungs and my heart and get the blood flowing and kind of reaching places where maybe it wouldn't usually reach. So yeah, it's like something that now is really like instilled in my daily practice. It's really good for my mental health, and there's other things that I kind of did alongside that, but it's not daily. So usually after doing breath work, I'll maybe do like another half hour of stretching, like a combination of yoga and Pilates. And then after that, I eat like a really good breakfast. I'm a big breakfast person.
Okay.
Lots of healthy toppings, like bee pollen and hemp seeds and flax seeds and different nuts, different fruits. Sometimes like I like to cook and stuff, so I'll maybe make like banana pancakes, like lots of things that are maybe gluten-free or dairy-free, and just try and keep my whatever goes into my body first thing super good for me. And then I'm a big tea drinker, so I drink a lot of herbal teas. I seem to go in and out of like having caffeine in my life.
I should do that.
Yeah. The thing is, because I have like this chronic fatigue, and even before I got diagnosed with chronic fatigue, as a stylist, I would even, in fact, when I was in college, I started drinking black coffee when I was very young, and I just loved the taste, but I never felt like increases in my energy levels through drinking caffeine. So I never really had a limit on how much I would drink. Sometimes I would drink like 3, 4, 5 cups of black coffee a day. And then once I did get diagnosed with chronic fatigue, and, you know, these two things I don't think were very related, but it just made sense that I should cut off like caffeine intake to see if that would help improve my natural energy levels. So yeah, now I'm kind of like, it depends how I'm at, where I'm at.
I used to do about 4 cups a day, the same uni work. I think, but sometimes I think it's actually like you said about it didn't really give you the energy. I think it's a bit of a myth. I think what it is, it's an addiction, and we tend to start thinking that we need it to get things done.
Yeah.
I feel like it can give you a buzz, but I don't know if that relates, transfers into energy to do stuff. I think it's a little bit of a con.
Usually if it's like, if I have a really intense work day or something, I'll be like, yeah, fuck it, I'm going to drink. I'm going to drink some caffeine. Just because little helps, you know, like any little helps. And it's so incremental, but I do find that green tea and like mate are stronger for me in terms of caffeine than coffee is.
Oh, I need to get into that. But I just wanted to take you back because you mentioned Wim Hof there. And I know maybe not everybody listening will know him. I definitely know him. His cold shower thing really helped me during the pandemic when my mood was just so low, like just so fed up of like, you know, only being outside for an hour, if that. And the cold showers, that's what gave me energy. It's like it turned something on in my head, and I'd be in such a good mood. So I wanted to know if there's any other things, because you mentioned you do some other things. Like has Wim Hof's system kind of, have you leaned into that quite a bit?
So I do cold showers. I don't do them every day. It generally depends on, how much energy I feel like I need. Also where I'm kind of at in terms of my own state of wellness. Sometimes I feel like, you know, I can't put my body through the discomfort, and then other days I'm like, no, I need the discomfort, it will help me. I have done cold showers. I've also done ice baths, which I've started doing more, and just cold baths in general, because I try to spend time in Mexico from time to time, and there it's a lot easier. I mean, there I don't even have hot water, so I have to have cold shower if I want to be clean. And then it's kind of easier to do ice bath and things like that as well, because you're instantly back in the heat. Whereas when I'm in London, you need to kind of, I don't know, take it more seriously, I think, in terms of like how you prep for these types of things, and whether you have, you know, like there was a time before the pandemic where I was looking into Wim Hof as well. And I'd started trying the cold showers. But at the time, I felt like my body actually couldn't regulate my own temperature very well. And it's not something that I encourage people who are really seriously ill to do, because I think, like, even in the daily, like, meditation that I listen to, it'll be like, and anyone can take a cold shower, like, and he believes that, you know, but I don't think it's true. Yeah,
he definitely believes it. I mean, he goes up on mountains in his pants, like, but
yeah, I think once you get, like, so high up in terms of, like, your own wellness, you forget how bad it can be for individual people.
Yeah. And
you can't necessarily encourage, like, an 80-year-old woman that's, like, I don't know, undergoing chemo or something to be taking cold showers every day. It might be dangerous for them. Yes. So, yeah, I think that everything in terms of, like, wellness, and any kind of, like, trends and crazes should always be taken with a pinch of salt and with a sense of, like, common sense, I think.
I think we should actually get rid of common sense in the dictionary, because it implies that it's common to all. And I think we need to realize, just like we were saying before we started recording, we're not all the same. We're not all the same things. There's no such thing as common sense, because we all come from different experiences and backgrounds. And
yeah, I was going to use the word logic, but then I was like, that seems even less common than common sense.
We need a new phrase.
Yeah.
Usually when I'm talking to somebody about the morning routine, I usually tend to go more like to like the past as well, and like talk about growing up. But I feel like with you, you know, I invited you on here because you started your own magazine called Able that is really targeted at, I believe, targeted at ableism, which I really want you to break down for the listeners, by the way. I don't want to get things wrong. I really want you to just kind of tell the listeners a little bit more about where you are at with your condition or illness, whatever you refer to it as. Before we go, because it just seems to make more sense. I don't want to dig into the old Claudia without addressing this.
And then it all went so downhill. Yeah, no, it's all good. Let's start with the heaviest part, I suppose. So I was working as a fashion stylist really from the ages of around like 18, 19 to 23. And it was when I was 23 that I was going to the doctor at the time because there were some things going on with my like reproductive system. I was like spotting. I was maybe having some other kinds of symptoms, but none that I can recall too seriously. I just remember feeling like, oh, it wasn't a great year for me in terms of I had a few health problems. But then I had to undertake a course of antibiotics. Oral antibiotics, and I went from like never having issues with my digestive system in my whole life, no allergies, no intolerances, like rarely sick in any kind of intestinal way, to simply feeling like a bomb had gone off in my stomach, and I knew all of my good bacteria had died as a result, and I couldn't metabolize food. I was like in pain from eating anything. I was having like huge, just like intestinal disturbance from eating or not eating. And it was super debilitating, and it felt like, you know, it opens up such a kettle of worms just having digestive issues alone. Like, okay, do I have leaky gut? Do I have SIBO? Do I have candida overgrowth? Should I be doing this? Should I be doing that? But kind of simultaneously, my energy levels began to drop really rapidly, and I was finding it hard to sort of stay awake. I would sleep really long hours, maybe 16 hours a day. And then during my waking hours, it was like I just didn't have the energy to do anything either. So your mind is quite active in those moments, but your body is physically unable to do the things that it was doing before, like basic self-care, the kind of fatigue and exhaustion, I think in everyday people's minds is just that feeling of being tired, like yawning, for example. Like you have a long day, you're going to be yawning, you're going to be feeling a bit low on energy, but this is like saturated through your entire bodily system. Every system of your body is not functioning optimally. So light and sound, which previously you wouldn't even notice, becomes painful because your senses are overwhelmed. The feeling of like complete depletion in your cells, so lifting a glass of water becomes so much more difficult than it would be previously. So if you take all of those things into account, and it's like every minute is like torture, to be honest, like extremely unpleasant and not nice thing to experience whatsoever. So yeah, I think within about 6 months from the onset of those symptoms, I got a diagnosis of chronic fatigue syndrome. At the time, the doctor said that it was mild to moderate. I had to go private because the waiting list on the NHS was really long. And similarly, when you stop being able to work because of illness, you are meant to provide evidence that you are sick to the DWP, the government, etc. And so you, after 6 months, a doctor's note from your GP will no longer suffice. You need to be like providing evidence from specialists and stuff. So I had to go private, and the first appointment I ever had with a specialist, he was like, "You're going to be fine. You just need to like sit up straight and smile and you'll get better." And gave me a piece of paper, one piece of paper. Like my life was literally, I thought I was dying. I got one sheet of paper with like maybe like four recommendations of supplements, a recommendation of like doing some mindfulness, doing a breathing exercise, and like that was it basically. And then like 6 months after that, I needed a wheelchair, so it was not well handled.
And that was when you went private?
Yes. Yeah.
Basically told that.
Yeah, I think he also practices on the NHS, but I mean, I don't think in terms of like immunology, you know, it's like, who do you even see when you have energy deficit or an energy disorder? That they can't place you. Do you know what I mean? They don't know like where that really sits. So I think immunology usually handle it, but none of these people have, if they have the know-how, they don't have the right, I suppose, within the NHS to issue treatments. Wow. And there's so much kind of red tape, and a lot of like systemic discrimination, but also kind of like lack of consensus within the medical community as to like the causes of these illnesses, the necessary treatments. And so for at least ME/CFS, there was at least maybe like 6 or 7 years from the beginning of, from before I got my diagnosis to now, where they weren't actually legally allowed to provide any treatments for these conditions because it was all under review.
Wow.
So yeah, I was super abandoned by the NHS. And even if you go private, it's just more difficult, I think, from there to weed your way through like the quacks and like the people that are not in the industry for the right reasons. Because I think a lot of them, I don't know what it must be like, but maybe if you've been working in the medical industry for like 15, 20 years and you see patient after patient after patient, you become desensitized to the suffering that people are going through, and you become less aware really of like the everyday toll that it takes on people and like the desperation that they have for answers and treatments. And so it's like you're like treated like cattle, do you know what I mean? And there's not a lot of sensitivity, and it's so financially extortionate to seek treatments for the types of conditions that I have, that a lot of my self-care and a lot of my treatment is all self-initiated. It's all research that I've done by myself and things that I can access for free. So a lot of like wellness stuff, I suppose, in terms of diet and like meditation, mental health, things to do with environment, environmental toxicity. This is like also skincare and cosmetics. And then things like your social life, the people that you have, the relationships you keep and everything like that. And then everything else is just like...
That is a lot. That is a lot. For you to, like you said, you had some little things like that didn't feel right. Then you take the antibiotics and then you're given a piece of paper. Obviously doing your own research, I'm guessing you weren't working by this point to even earn the money to pay for the things that you could possibly try. Like, how did you even handle that minefield? That is a lot for one person.
Yeah, I mean, it really was like, it's painful to look back on it, because one thing that I always say is like, when you don't receive validation from the medical community as to what you're experiencing and the severity of your illness, you are unlikely to receive validation from the people around you, like your friends and your family. That becomes extremely isolating, and you're faced with so much like internal ableism as a result of like, I guess, the bad press that disabled people get, and people that have the kinds of conditions that aren't widely recognized. There's so many reasons as to why they might not be widely recognized. It could be the causes of these illnesses that have things to do with capitalism, like pollution, chemicals, as well as also like our corporate work culture, stress, racism, trauma, these types of things. And then women historically have faced a lot of discrimination within the medical field, as because there's so much research historically was always done on men. There was always like this idea that if you're not kind of in line with like, what do they call it? Whatever is perceived to be normal, you know, like a normal weight, a normal height, a normal ability to process like anesthetics or things that medications, like even like female birth control was like originally tested on men. Like there's
shame they didn't make some for them. Well, they're at it.
Yeah, a lot of like sexism historically within the medical field. So with things that I was diagnosed with, historically they would have been diagnosed as forms of hysteria. You know, if a woman or a nervous disposition and things where, yes, there's probably lots of biomarkers in our blood that show that we have like issues with our mitochondria, that we have some other kinds of cellular deficiencies. There are so many blood tests and stuff that can already be done to accurately diagnose these conditions. There's something to do with, I don't know, like the cost, and also I think just validating these diseases, like even long COVID is a more modern example of the fact that they just want to suppress, like they want to suppress it. They don't want to validate that this is extremely serious and this is quite widely spread at this point, and this is the toll it's going to take on our workforce. How do people who cannot work because they're so sick pay rent? You know, like there's a lot of different factors involved with treating these kinds of conditions, and it all kind of starts with giving credit where credit is due to the people that are experiencing it and saying that this is real and this is something that we need to fight. There isn't that much desire to fight these things, because I think it's when people are oppressed, it's always easier to just like continue oppressing them than to actively try to lift them up and solve their problems.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's loads of, you know, I feel like I actually don't talk about this stuff that often anymore, so I'm not sure how articulate I'm being.
What you've shown me is how much you've learned, because you seem to know so much literally about the body itself. And I'm just like, it just, to me, it shows that you have done so much for yourself, like reading, finding things out. And it's just, I guess, is it a case of being grateful for the internet at this point? Because.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, because I didn't have a lot of options in how to go about these things medically. And when I did put money into, say, seeing a nutritionist, like that was the first thing that I did, because I figured, well, my stomach was the first thing to go. So if I can heal that, then maybe my energy will come back. And the types of things that she had me doing and the supplements that I was taking and everything, I was just getting worse, and I was losing a lot of weight, and I was not able to keep up with like the expectation of having, you know, like organic foods, for example. Like in England, it's not that easy to find organic foods. No. And it's also very expensive to buy organic foods. So it just felt like everything was becoming more and more inaccessible to me, and I was becoming more and more vulnerable and unable to do things for myself, and really needing support and not finding enough places where I could access support. So I did have to take like a step back from trying to heal myself physically and really focus on how am I going to cope with this stuff mentally. And I think that was a big turning point for me, because it allowed me, I basically went to a disability charity, and in the past I've gone to women's charities and the NHS to try and seek support for my mental health and have talking therapy, because I was so isolated. Like I really didn't have enough support for the things that I was dealing with on a daily basis. So once I was able to access that, it was a process of being able to accept the things that were happening to me. And then I think once you reach a level of acceptance, then you're able to approach changing things slowly for yourself. And a lot of that for me is just like, I might not ever be fully healthy. I might not ever be non-disabled again or not have chronic health issues. But what I refuse to have is a low quality of life. Mm-hmm. So I need to just focus on trying to achieve the highest quality of life that I can in order to be happy, in order to have joy in my life, in order to have a purpose and a reason for living. Because I think that when you're just focused on like trying to treat and cure yourself, like it doesn't allow you to like appreciate the things that you do have, and it doesn't breed like much happiness within yourself. There is so much failure that you have to deal with when your body is not working optimally. So it just takes a toll, I think. And unless you really have like strong fortitude of mind, it's like a recipe for destruction almost, which is super hard because people deserve to have good treatment and to have support with their life, I suppose. And that doesn't just include like taking medical treatments. You know, I think holistically, when you look at the entire body, there's a lot of different things and factors involved. But I think that it's always luck of the draw, like what support you receive and what you're able to access when you're sick, and most people don't have enough.
I'm just very intrigued to know, like, what do you feel like, because you said that was a turning point when it kind of, I guess it kind of clicked, if you focus more on your mind and how your mind processes things rather than trying to fix areas that aren't what they used to be. But what would you say is the biggest tool that you can lean on to do that? Is it meditation? Is it like, is there a key thing that really helped?
I think a big tool for me was podcasts, actually. I listened to a lot of podcasts that had, like there was this great one that I used to listen to a lot. What's it called? It's a Kabbalah podcast. Okay. And Kabbalah is like a form of spirituality that extends from Judaism. And it's more like it's in line with like astrology, but also it's about giving you like the tools for life, like how to basically be a better person and to be able to like process negative things or difficult things. Because the theory is that we are like reincarnated, and every reincarnation we experience is in order to overcome the challenges that you faced in the first. So, for example, if you have like a negative relationship with your with a parental figure, if you're not able to overcome that through changing how you approach these issues, then in your next life, same relationship is going to manifest itself in another dynamic, until you can basically improve how you approach challenges, essentially. So that was one of them. And I would listen to a lot of podcasts to do with chronic illness and kind of like the origins of different diseases, and then also things to do with just like self-improvement. So like whether that's in like a career capacity, relationships with friends, with your love life, more things to do, like more esoteric things around like different aspects of spirituality. And I became more spiritual. That was a big thing for me. I used to do like a lot of crystal healing on myself, for example, because I was so at a loss for like
You tried.
Yeah, and with the lack of like, I mean, I still use crystals to this day. I don't use them necessarily as much, but like I still do a lot of reading around like epigenetics and like quantum physics and how, you know, if everything is matter, then our thoughts are matter. So what we think about is super important. What we project into the universe is really important. And everything that we give value to. So if I give value to the crystals that I have, and I believe that they have certain attributes and certain powers, essentially, to support different elements of like the body, looking into chakra systems, exploring like, yeah, what are the spiritual causes for certain ailments in the body? Reading about all of these types of things, very much self-initiated. But it made me cope so much better with what I was experiencing, because, you know, if you can't get answers from like the specialists and the medical professionals, then I have to seek those answers elsewhere. And I believe that in some ways it's taken me a lot further.
Given what you've learned and kind of taught yourself and read about, how, aside, because it's very much what you're talking about is the mind, how you feel in your mind, obviously, aside from how the physical has changed, but how would you say Claudia has changed from when you were, before you ever got remotely sick, when you were actively working as a stylist and living life? Like, what kind of mental space were you in then?
I've always been an intelligent person, and I've always been an overachiever. So for me, like being able to not do anything and not kind of like prove myself and not have things to do actively with my mind was something like that I always needed. But I definitely wasn't as concerned with like more social justice issues and things to do with, it was things that I cared about, but I never felt like my voice was important or like the one that should be heard. And I did my degree in journalism, and when I left, it was like, I don't want to be paid for my voice. I don't want my voice to be altered for money, essentially. And that's when I went into styling. So through getting sick, a lot of things changed for me in that my capacity for empathy rose like exponentially. I became a lot more sensitive to the suffering of others. I had a very like love-hate relationship with the fashion industry and the beauty industry, because I think that there's a lot of exciting, meaningful, beautiful things that deserve space in those industries, but there is a lot of shallowness, and there is a lot of in authenticity with regards to things such as diversity. And I became more of a critical thinker, basically. I think that that is what has changed. Internally, I think that I've become a lot more able to cope with talking about difficult things and dealing with difficult things, not necessarily having the same levels of like shame and self-consciousness to do with my body, but also like the topics of disability, because they are extremely shame-laden, and the way that we approach it as a society tends to be quite toxic, because there's not a lot of empathy and there's not a lot of kind of accurate representation that allows for society's attitudes to change towards disabled people. So yeah, that's basically why I started Ablezine. That's why.
Before we get into that, I want to hear so much more about Ablezine, but first of all, for people listening, give me your definition, the correct definition of ableism, because I know some people won't get it and I don't want to get it wrong.
Ableism essentially is just different forms of discrimination directed towards disabled people and people that have quote unquote differences or defy the norms that we have been socialized to assume, I think. So I do believe that ableism extends beyond disability, because really it's anything that's considered to be abnormal or different. And I always like to use nature as a good kind of point of reflection, because, you know, if you see a flower that traditionally has four petals, but this one's grown with three, you're not going to like chop it off and like criticize it and say like, this doesn't belong here or whatever. It's just a natural deviation of nature, essentially a deviation of nature that's as acceptable as any other. It's natural. It's something that will always occur. We cannot eradicate these kinds of changes within the genetics of plant matter or human matter. And so it's when people are just unaccepting or want to hide and like eradicate forms of disability because they see them as something inherently negative. Obviously a lot of like forms of disability and illness do come with suffering, but I think for me, the reason why I was so radicalized by my suffering was because I saw all of the value that it contained and the things it was able to teach me and the positive changes that came within myself as a result of my suffering. And so it's about creating space for these experiences and giving value to them in order to advance as a species, essentially, and to become more loving and more understanding of the things around us, because there is value in whatever does defy the norm. It's just about, yeah, making space for it and allowing it to happen. Hopefully that's a decent description.
No, thank you. So would you, with that in mind, would you say that ABLE is a magazine for able-bodied or disabled people? Because it obviously able-bodied people need to see this, they need to read this, they need to hear your voice, because even speaking to you, you know, you mentioned that word diversity, and it's one of my least favorite words, because I personally think it is, it's so trend-led. It's like, but it's only ever, disability is probably the lowest on the rung of diversity. It's hard enough for brands to show one black face, one Asian face, one white face, one redhead, someone with freckles. They're literally just about able to show one person, maybe with a prosthetic limb.
No, I completely agree. I think that the way that I approached it was to kind of bridge the gap between able-bodied, non-disabled people and disabled people. I do believe that it's important for non-disabled people to look at, to be exposed to these types of media, essentially, in order to, and the reason why I chose a publication to do that was because it's not something where, you know, like say it was, you're making YouTube videos and then you're inundated with comments below and you get a lot of trolls and you get a lot of hate and then you get some supporters. I don't like that. Like, I don't want to have to see negative comments on something that I like. Like, I mean, it happens all the time on social media, but it's something that I'm sensitive to. It's something that reminds me of the things that are wrong in the world, you know. With something like a magazine that you can sit down and read by yourself, or you happen to be in a space where it's sat on the side, and whether it's a bathroom or like a waiting room somewhere, if you pick something up and you become engaged and you start learning things that you wouldn't usually learn, or listening to a type of voice that you wouldn't usually listen to, I think that's where real change can really happen, because people aren't self-conscious of like being watched, being judged. How do you respond to this? You know, maybe someone's going to throw it away. Maybe someone, like, you know, like there's always going to be people out there that don't want to change, that don't want their views challenged, and who don't, are so unhappy within themselves that they can't ever allow space for difference. But I think that this is a safer way for people to engage with like disability representation and disability media. Also without having to, you know, like they can pick up language, for example, that, and think, okay, that might be the right way that I should say this. And that's not to say that there's always a right way and a wrong way, because like language is always changing. And I think we need a certain degree of like grace, and allow people grace when it comes to not being right. We're not always exposed to the same things. We cannot be expected to always know the same things as one another, which is funny because there's not always a lot of grace from within the community if you like get it wrong.
Oh gosh,
yeah, it's pretty heavy at times. There's a lot of things that I don't like about doing this work as well, but give and take, you know, like I'm not perfect. No, can't expect anybody to be perfect, and we're all a work in progress, I think. But yeah, that's how I see it. I mean, I do see it as a publication for disabled people. I think that there needs to be space for us, made by us. That's not like, that's not in question, you know. It's like, but then at the same time, I think we need to be open to people's experiences, people who maybe don't identify as disabled but still experience a level of difficulty or challenge within their daily experience with whatever that might be. So just to have some flexibility around these terms, I think allows for a different type of progress. But that's not to say that other kind of publications or platforms that are a bit more strict don't also have the right to have those spaces, or that those spaces aren't equally important.
Well, you're just trying to make a new space. Do you know what I mean? That is just not, you know, they talk about some spaces or markets, if you want to call it that, being oversaturated. Yours absolutely is not so. Underserved, you know. But I wondered if you could, I know we don't have all day, but I wondered if you could share some of like the most common misconceptions about being disabled that you do try to address with the issue, you know, with ABLE.
I think the biggest one for me, just coming from like a fashion background, and one where we do look at representation and visibility daily, was this idea that there are no young disabled people, and that there aren't like disabled people in their 20s, for example, because my shame and my ableism emanated from the fact that when I first got sick, I was racking my brain for images of disability, and the only ones I could see were like the white figures on the blue placards of like a hobbled over old man with the walking stick. He's got like a curve in his back, or you're a stick figure in a wheelchair. And just knowing from being in hospitals and places like that, that there isn't, there's a lot more acceptance that when you age, you become disabled, as opposed to disability is something that can affect anybody at any age. And also with organizations like the BBC, when we see young disabled people, it's always in a charity context and like this inspiration porn context of like, this poor person was born with this, let's help fundraise to get them like an adaptive like bicycle or something like that. And that's not to say that these aren't necessary like things that young disabled people need, but that they're like confined almost to like this one type of representation, which is that they are needy and that they're underserved. Not that these kids have their own lives, their own passions, their own loves, their own hates. And I think that disabled people are just not given like room to be expansive and to be like individuals, and so naturally with a background in fashion that like extends to aesthetics and it extends to the way that we respect other people's kind of individuality through the choices that they make in a consumer context. And I think something that really bothered me was that like the disabled community is underserved, you know, in a medical context, maybe first and foremost, but also as consumers, like we are not advertised to, we are not acknowledged as a consumer group that has a large amount of spending power. And also when you look at like the benefit system and all of the hate that emanates from people that are on benefits, regardless of why they're on benefits, I mean, they will, there's a lot of negative press that goes into a social system that is really one of the best in the world. Like there is a lot of criticism that people within this country can make, obviously because we face different economic circumstances than other countries. But if you go to other countries, countries that don't have governments that are, can be relied upon to a certain degree, with no social nets in place, we do have a lot to be grateful for, that these systems are available to a certain degree. And if someone is on benefits, they still have spending power. They can still contribute to the economy. And I think that we don't believe enough in like a circular economy where, regardless of people's forms of income, if people are spending money and, you know, contributing towards other people's jobs, other industries keeping them afloat, I don't really understand where all the hate comes from.
I think it links back to what you said about empathy as well, though. Myself personally, I feel a lot of people don't even want to see others that don't look the same. I mean, I think there's a discomfort. I can't describe it, but I just feel there are some people that don't like to accept difference, and they themselves lead pretty miserable lives. Like very, they don't, like if you can go through something that's tough and still see beauty and want to look for it, on the flip side of that, there's someone that doesn't look for beauty. They just look for, it's like this narrow, let me wake up every day and just go to this place and only speak to these type of people. And there's like this misery that doesn't enable them to be empathetic and to be warm and open and to ask you how things have been. Do you know what I mean? Like really ask.
I think also, people, they don't have empathy. So if they drive through a part of the country, for example, and say, oh, this is such a shithole, imagine having to live here. That's the only way they see it with regards to how they might feel if they were in that situation. They don't have the empathy for the people that are living in those situations, the types of sacrifices those people might have to make. the type of choices that people make as a result of living in poverty or, you know, being in abusive situations, whatever it might be. There's a lot of different challenges that people face. And I think that you're right. A lot of people, one thing that I always criticize, like, a certain type of man for is this idea that, like, their experience is the defining experience. And so, like, how they perceive something is the truth. And how they experience, like, say, education or getting into the workforce must be true for everybody. And it's like, no, bro, like, you need to expand your mind and start looking at the same topics, but from multiple perspectives. Try and just, like, pick up different perspectives and then start making, like, opinions. Don't be making opinions just through your own experience exclusively. I mean, obviously, depending on what we're talking about, individual opinion matters, individual experience matters. But sometimes people are just so confident with, like, their opinions on much greater issues than they really fully can ever say that they've experienced alone. So yeah, that's something that I think we could work on.
it's like such a big job, because I'm just like, I have a lot of men, it's literally like they have it within them, this strength and this belief that this is this, you know. And it can even go from a dad being like, well, that's not how I would do that, because you know, to right now, say, like, young men who are now parents just passing the same thing on. And I think it's like we mentioned common sense earlier and then we settled on thoughtful. It's literally, if everybody was a teeny bit more thoughtful, you would kind of create a little bit more space, just a teeny bit more space to, like, talk more or listen more. Yeah. I think that would be helpful. Obviously, you started Able, but you're still you as well. So you're doing this for, you know, your community, but you're still you. And I wanted to know, have you had to, because, you know, for anyone that's listening, when I look at Claudia, you look like I'm going to have to use the normal world. You're a slim, attractive woman. I've seen one picture of you where you have a walking stick. Today, I can just see you head and shoulders. So for whatever terms and purposes, you look like normality. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. For want of a better word. But for other people, when you think disabled, an image will come into your head, like the ones that you mentioned. So was there ever a point for you where you've had to deal with, like, your own thoughts? Like, you know, some people talk about internalized colorism, you know, feeling that my skin tone is more superior or inferior. Is that a similar thing that can happen when you become disabled and you're looking at yourself and you're like, hey, this isn't the picture that I was raised on?
Yeah, definitely. I think that there's like an ongoing debate around the term invisible disability and to what extent it applies. I think now that I'm not in the same state I was in when I was first sick, which was really severely disabled in my opinion. And, like, sometimes this type of degree of severity can help in terms of where people are at in terms of, like, their mindsets and the things that they believe and how they want to talk about things and what have you. I was definitely suffering a lot more, and I had a greater need for visual aids that other people can relate to and associate with disability, whether that's a wheelchair or a walking stick. These things were occasionally things that I relied on and to a certain degree still do. There's a term called dynamic disability, which is this idea that some disabilities are variable and they can change daily. So some weeks you may have a need for one type of mobility aid and then that need might dissipate and you don't need it. That doesn't make you less disabled. It just makes your experience changing, which can actually be something more challenging for somebody to experience, because it's one thing to have like something you can consider as a fact, and then it's not changing, and so you just adjust, and then that's your life moving forward. Not to say it's easier or harder, but for somebody else who's constantly going through like the ups and downs and variable conditions, you're having to deal with different people's opinions, you're having to deal with changes in your own level of capacity to cope with like these variables. So it can also be very challenging to have disabilities like this. But initially I was like, there's not really such a thing as an invisible disability, because it just depends on what people can see, and like people who are closer to you can probably tell if you're having a worse day, regardless of whether you use a mobility aid or not. Like maybe I'll have really bad bags under my eyes, my skin will be gone. And like, for me, a big thing is my attitude, my mood. Like if I'm not feeling well, I don't have the capacity to be that nice. Like I'm grumpy, I'm struggling. Like when someone's having the flu, we give them a certain amount of grace that they're not going to show up as their best self every freaking moment. Like something that I think I struggle with the most as somebody with like an invisible disability is this idea that I'm just going to be like perfect all the time for everybody. Like, and I'm sorry, but like, I can't, like, it's a mental struggle to be coping with like so much pain or so much discomfort in the body and still be expected to have like these social graces that we often make like an expectation for women and not for men. Like, so yes, like I like to use that analogy because somebody used it for me when I was upset about this type of topic, that like, yeah, but if someone had the flu, you wouldn't expect them to be that nice.
it's so true. But it's like, there's so many layers again, because even you as a woman, you know, there's that whole concept of, oh, put a smile on. And then a woman who is disabled, like, I think, again, that might be, because I'm, as we're talking, every now and then I try and think of examples I've seen on TV. And honestly, all I can think is maybe like Children in Need, you know, which in the UK is a big charity. You know, every year they have the TV show with the big teddy bear and raise lots of money. And it's often, obviously, you want to see smiling faces. You don't want to see sadness. But the fact is that not every child that you see in a wheelchair or who is going through something else should have to feel like, I'm going through all this, but I'm just gonna be so gung ho and happy because I get to exist. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not that way for you as a non-disabled person, so why expect it?
Yeah, exactly. I do think that we have unrealistic expectations on people who are in experiencing forms of suffering, but that's just how it is, you know. I think I don't know if that's ever going to change, but I do think that nowadays I do see myself more in line with maybe having it. I like to use the term a visible disability and a less visible disability, because I think invisibility removes some of the validation that people could and people deserve essentially for the things that they experience. And, you know, it's like often people with cancer, you know, unless they have like a shaved head or are wearing like something to indicate that they've had hair loss or are undergoing chemo, you also wouldn't know if someone had cancer a lot of the time. Is it an invisible disability? Like, I don't know. It's a pretty serious illness. Like, so I think that there's just, again, like room for flexibility around how we talk about things, and that there shouldn't ever really just be like one term for an experience that can be so incredibly varied among people.
So this is something that happened to you not overnight, but you weren't expecting it. If you had an opportunity to speak to your younger self now, I mean, what could you tell yourself?
I think that stress is something that I would like to maybe have considered more from an earlier age in terms of why it's not healthy to have stress, if you can help it, you know. But there were things that I would stress about that maybe I didn't have to. And also I think there's things that we do as young people, just with regards to, like, especially if you're a young person and you want to get involved with fashion and stuff, there's, you don't necessarily give yourself room to be that different at times, or like to have interests and hobbies outside of things, because I think we pressure young people from a really early age to focus on success and not on happiness. And I think that it would have just been nicer to have had like more happiness in my youth, as opposed to being so like one track minded of like, need to do this, need to be successful at this, need to grind, da 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 da. Yeah, I didn't give myself like that much freedom, I think. And it's funny how like a lot of people go through these major transitions in life where, like, for me, I was super like responsible when I was younger. I was always the one like saying no to drugs and like looking after all my friends who were like a mess, and I was like the more sober one. And I just adopted this role of being like a caregiver or like a mother figure. Because I was scared, you know, I was scared of being out of control. I was scared of having regrets. And now that I've like dealt with things in life that I would not want anybody to have to experience, I'm like, fuck it, YOLO. Like, yes to everything. Like, fuck this. Like, I don't care about like a lot of these things that everybody's like getting drilled into their head all the time about what it means to be like successful and stuff. I've actually changed massively, like even in the past 2 years. Like, a lot of, I'm not doing as much work with Able Zine, because I was giving all of myself to everyone else, like pouring from such an empty cup in order to make work to serve an entire community, and not necessarily feeling like I was feeding myself or I was receiving like the same amount of effort and investment back. And it's not to say that other people are responsible for that at all, but that is my responsibility to take care of myself. And it's not something that I was doing because, you know, I like witnessed all of these problems and felt like I was in a unique position to do something about it, which is very much true. But I put so much pressure on myself that, like, if I didn't do it right, then I was going to be, like, creating something negative and contributing harm and doing all of this negative stuff when I only ever had the greatest intentions. I didn't need to be so hard on myself and not allow any room to give back to myself. And so that's kind of been more of my focus over the past year and a half, to like see who I am once again outside of this, and to discover my own identity that's not tied to creating a whole identity for something else. Because I felt like it was important to not have like my face or my identity too much associated with Able Zine, because it is a community project and it is something that's meant to have a representation and a visibility far beyond myself. But without the support systems in place to ensure that I'm okay, it wasn't always healthy for me to give as much as I gave. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at currently, and I'm still doing exploring. I'm still exploring.
It sounds like you're evolving. It's like, and that's what we're all meant to do, I think. Again, people that live, use that normal word again, it's just like, this leads to that and that leads to this, and you carry on doing this, and there's no, it's rare that you get an opportunity to pause and evolve. And I think one of the few positives of the pandemic, I do think it allowed many different types of people to really review, slow down, stop, evolve, like change things. And I see many people now, since it's, many people believe it's over, but it really isn't over for everybody. They've gone straight back to what was before. And I think that's a little bit even more sad. Do you know what I mean? I think you are on a journey, you made something and you can go back to it anytime, but you cannot take yourself for granted. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
The person that you are today.
And, you know, time flies. Like, I've honestly just been like, past like 2 years, maybe, I'm just like, Jesus, like 1 month is January and then the next month is June. Like, no one can tell me that linear time is still like happening, because time is just shifting and jumping so quickly, I think. And it's super disheartening sometimes as a sick person that has to deal with, like, you know, like if you ask me what I do in the mornings, it depends on what I have to do. But like some days it takes me maybe 3 or 4 hours to get to the point where I can like fully get up and get out and do something. And you just feel like you lose so much time getting to a point where you can just about get your body to do, like, to commit to, like, I don't know, everyday experiences that most people have to do. And I feel like there's a level of privilege in the fact that, like, I cannot work a full-time job and I cannot work a 9-to-5. Like, in a way, it's a burden, because yes, I would like to be able to do that in order to have financial security for myself, but at the same time I see how toxic it is for people to not have time for themselves, to not have time for their family or for their health. And also the fact that it's extremely normalized to work far beyond like a 9-to-5 anyway. I mean, there are many times when I work from like 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. maybe, because that's like maybe a more functional time frame for me. And I don't like, I can't commit to this kind of like routine. That's just not how I function. And for other people, it's super normal. But for me, I think like a 4-day working week would be far more ethical and also far more productive. So I wish that could be like one step we could take as a society to like bring back balance into people's lives. Because we're just sacrificing way too much, like, for the sake of capitalism. Mm-hmm.
I think balance is a funny word anyway. It's like, I feel like balance can ebb and... I think even if we were taught that it's okay if balance ebbs and flows throughout our lives, it's okay. But I think it's almost the pursuit of balance that can actually really throw you out, because you're trying so hard, you know, to be the perfect mum, the perfect friend.
You just need to like think about it and just find your own sense of balance and not necessarily conform to like, an idea that it needs to be, to be in a relationship, it has to be like 50-50 or something like that. Like, maybe if you have more capacity at this moment in time, or you're like, yes, now I really need to focus on this thing. But just, you know, never go like 4 years straight without having some reflection, because it will bite you in the ass.
So I feel like, you seem to be like someone that really knows yourself, like knows who you are. But I would love to know, like, when do you feel just the best version of you, like the most you? What does that look like?
It's so hard, because like I get slack for like spending a lot of time by myself.
From who? Family or
from a lot of places, I think, because I'm a young woman and I've not had like very serious romantic relationships in my 20s. I mean, I'd ask anybody to be like in the same shoes as me and to have had that far bigger priorities. And yeah, just other things that I had to deal with, and there's not always space to make room for other people when you're having to do that much work, you know. But it's like I think because I have the capacity to be extroverted and I have like a confidence and things that would imply that I would have like strong social relationships and be an outgoing person. I'm also really introverted and like enjoy spending time by myself in order to make these the progress in my mind that I feel like is not always easier to do when you're around other people and exposed to like too much distraction. But I feel like sometimes it's like the moments where I get to in my brain where I feel like it's insane that like I can be happy, you know, like, but I've gotten there because I've changed who I am, like from the inside out. And even if like my body is a work in progress and I can't always be happy with where that is at least I can be happy with who I am and how I'm able to cope with my circumstances and how I'm able to benefit other people through sharing my own experiences and my own like thought processes. So I think that's usually when I'm happiest, when I have one of those realizations that I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be, even if in someone else's mind it would be like not an optimal place. But I think we've really got to try to be happy with where we're at and then focus like long term on trying to make it even better.
Do you know why that was the one of my favorite answers ever? Because it had nothing to do with the external, like whatsoever. And it almost sounds like it's a fact. You are more than your body. You're so much more. Do you know what I mean? Because, you know, I always ask people that question. And sometimes it's about the things that you put on, the smells that you smell, the place that you go, the people you're with. And you just went so internal. I love that. No, but I love that because you're always going to have that to go back to. Yeah. You know, you're always going to have that part.
Maybe why I can't have like successful romantic relationships, because you start changing so quickly in your mind, like you can't like control it as easily. I feel like when I can be in control of like my thoughts is when I feel most like in balance, at peace, you know. And sometimes it's really difficult for me to be faced with like short-term challenges, because there's always this idea that like, oh, if you love yourself and if you're happy by yourself, then you're going to be able to have like relationships with other people. I don't think it works like that. Like, I honestly don't. I think there's so many small examples of like me not being able to deal with like how other people might treat me, or like the type of communication that we might have or something like that, where I just feel like, Noah, I'm more at peace when I'm by myself. So maybe that's healthier for me for now. Yeah.
But for now is the key, because like I can give you my personal story and be like, well, actually I feel like it's when you're happy and you're not even looking. Like, it's not about looking, you're doing X, Y, Z. But that's just me. And before that happened to me, I probably would have been like, no, whatever, I'm good. I've had relationships in the past. Whereas with you, again, it's this image that we've been sold about relationships, you know, that they look a certain way. So for you, I just, yeah, just stick with that for now. Things may well change. Maybe they won't. But again, the most important thing is, how are you, you know?
Yeah.
That's the most important thing, because if you're not good, whatever you bring is not, it's not going to last anyway, you know? Last question, Claudia, and then I'm going to let you go. What's the one question you wish people asked you more often?
I don't know. I think that actually when you talk so much about like disability and stuff like that, it doesn't necessarily make much space for you to talk about like things that other people consider to be more trivial. But sometimes even with trivial things, I find that like I've had to do so much like analysis and research into like basic stuff that I feel like anything has importance and anything can be extremely meaningful. So yeah, sometimes I wish I could talk more about like just like the everyday stuff, and other things. Like, yeah, it would be so fun to like sit and do an hour long podcast about like fashion for me, or an hour long podcast about like makeup, because it's not necessarily something I have been given the space to do. And so in terms of like me changing and giving more back to myself now, I'm finding myself like having more passions outside of the advocacy and outside of like activism or talking about these issues that have a lot of like seriousness attached to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that like it's a privilege to have a voice in that community and to be able to make progress just through like sharing my experiences or my opinions about those things. But yeah, I'm trying to bring like more fun back into my life as well. So,
okay, well, you can come back on here and talk about makeup for an hour with me. Okay. We can do that. But Claudia, that is it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm
super excited and appreciate the opportunity.
I hope you found this episode insightful when it comes to Claudia's personal story and also learns a little bit more about what ableism really is. If you think someone else could benefit from hearing more about Claudia, please do share this episode with them. Be sure to let me know what you think over in the DMs on Twitter or Instagram at BeautyMePodcast, or say hi over on TikTok at Charisse Kenyon. And you can also find me on Threads at Charisse_Kenyon. I'm not sure for how long. It's kind of fun. Let me know if you're on Threads. Right now, it definitely seems fun, but it's also another social media platform to be seen on. I'm definitely going to share clips from my chat with Claudia, so look out for those. And I'll leave links to Claudia and Ablezine on Instagram in the show notes for you. And I'll leave a link to the Ablezine website. All of the issues are sold out, but I just want you to see all of the amazing covers that Claudia created. So I'll share that for you. If you enjoyed listening, it would be great if you could hit subscribe or follow. It makes a huge difference, and I love seeing followers going up each week. But even more importantly, if you can leave a review, that just tells people this is the show for you, or this isn't the show for you. So leave a review. That would be amazing. Thanks so much for listening. I'll see you next time.